Hello, this is Paige and this is Muhammad, and
welcome to our podcast. we would like to we're here to talk about the book we're reading in our statistics class called How to Lie in Statistics. And Paige and I are probably just going to go over the first two chapters and to talk about what was going on there. And just, you know, go
and
over...
And the fundamentals with the built-in bias, which is within statistics.
Yeah. Paige, you want to go on about the first chapter?
Sure, Muhammad. Okay, so basically the first chapter is about how statistics lies, and how we are frequently unknown to their fabricating. So this chapter basically explains how certain surveys are like rigged and not explained with all the way truths. Like an example would be like, say if they did a survey of how many Americans take showers on a daily basis. Like, American who doesn't take a shower on a daily basis won't go to a person taking the survey and say, oh, yeah, I don't take showers on a regular basis. They're going to say, yeah, because that's just embarrassing. And so when you're doing a sample, it is a very likely chance that the people are lying.
Changes
the odds.
Yes, which changes the odds. But with the whole changes the odds aspect, you can look at, basically this is a, sort of like a sample size sort of question when you ask, you know, what is a good sample size to use in a survey? You can look at examples like in the NBA with free throws. You know, when they look at free throw percentage, you know, how many you get and how many you miss, they look at the season total because obviously usually players take hundreds and hundreds of free throws a season. So that is the best distortion. That is the best, you know, demographic to use. And, you know, as Paige said, an example with me, people who take showers or whom take showers and say, you know, there can be a lot of different ways to manipulate the data, or like we can't really trust the data because of the different aspects and elements that really come into play. It's like, say, people with their honestness, because obviously people don't want to say they don't take showers, or, you know, the whole demographic. Like, you can go to a place where they don't have enough water quality, say, you know, Louisiana after Katrina, and say, you know, who takes showers here? Everyone could say, we don't take any showers because they don't have the necessary water supply to take showers. But that clearly doesn't show the United States as a whole on whom takes showers. So that was basically just a rundown of what chapter one was about, you know, how that, you know, distortion of different aspects of statistics. Now, Paige, you want to start into chapter two? Yeah, Paige, do you have a question?
No, there is just a point in chapter one when it said, we were talking about a psychiatrist and how a psychiatrist was trying to figure out, he was observing a neurotic person, basically. And it says that it turns out that he has reached this indefinable conclusion from studying his patients who are long, long away from being a sample of the population. If a man were normal, our psychiatrist would never meet him. And I don't know. I felt like that was a little confusing. I think what they're getting at is, like, since he is a psychiatrist and since he sees so much neurotic patients, that I guess he wouldn't detect which is a normal man or not. I don't know why that confused me, but it just did. But that's on page 19, first paragraph. So yeah. So, let's go to chapter two. Chapter two, is called The Well-Chosen Averages. This chapter basically explains, the mean-median mode, and, it explains, it first opens up with, a person who is trying to decide where to live, either in a neighborhood that earns an income of $15,000 or an income of $3,500. It's just basically about splitting averages into mean-median mode and figuring out when an average can be a mean or an average can be state as a mode, whatever. Delete that part. Okay. And, and they also had something called in here called whopping salary. I really don't know what that means. But,
Yeah, and I think what Paige is trying to get into is, like, the whole, you know, things could be distorted into a new average or a new mode. Say, like, we, in math, we, or in statistics, we went into the whole,
skew right, skew left, and how those actually
affect, you know, multiplication doesn't affect it, or, you know, adding or subtracting will affect it, and there are different aspects of how mean, median, and average kind of go into, play when you go into, when you talk about those kind of things. And that's the end of our podcast for this week, and hopefully you'll come back and listen to us next week.
Bye-bye. Part two, baby.
Hi, and welcome to Muhammad and Paige's discussion for chapters 3 and 4 for our stats benchmark. In this group presently is Muhammad Marzouk and Paige Wayman. First, we're going to talk about chapters 3 and 4, talk about, you know, have a discussion about it, and then see, you know, have an honest, obviously in a discussion, and see if we have any conflicting conflicts, and answer some questions from the past chapters. And for chapter 3, you want to start out, Paige, for chapter 3?
Yeah. Chapter 3 is the title is The Little Figures That Aren't There, and this chapter is about how items and statistical data are causing people to believe in false information due to the fact that industries are presenting false information to the public. And what Mr. Huff tries to get across and show is the process in which people use to create false data analysis. And in this chapter, Huff explains, like, sample data and how companies are using that small sample or those small trials to get across for us to get a good review out of their product and versus a large group. And with a large group, there would be a lot of trials that would vary, and so that's why smaller samples and smaller trials are good when testing out new products. So.
Yeah, these are interesting because if you think about it, when you look at like Coke, when you look at, you know, Coke, and you know, this is basically just like about like marketing ads and showing how we sample the right data of marketing ads, basically saying, you know, this was tested 5-to-1 better than Pepsi was, but in that group, you don't know if they paid off the people to say they liked Coke or they just basically lied and manipulated the data to show that Coke was better than Pepsi, but actually it wasn't better than Pepsi. One example that the author talks about was the Giselle norms, where Dr. Arnold Giselle stated that most kids sit erect by the age of 2. This immediately translates to a parent starting to think about his or her kid and deciding whether the kid is normal or not. What's missing is other forms of sources or information, like the research, to properly say, you know, what is true, what is accurate about that statement, to really conflict on people. That really shows that, you know, if a doctor publishes something and he takes like 6 kids and it shows this is how I got it, people are going to believe it, and that's kind of how statistics kind of lie in a way that happens. Paige, do you have any other comments about chapter 3?
No, I'm good.
Well, let me ask you a question. What's your favorite food to eat?
Broccoli.
Clearly you don't see a lot of broccoli commercials out there, but do you think if you saw a commercial saying, you know, kids who eat candy over broccoli are happier? Would you eat candy rather than broccoli?
Yeah, I'll eat candy over broccoli because reviews say that candy tastes better than broccoli, so of course I'm going to eat candy more than broccoli.
Yeah, but isn't in real life, isn't broccoli healthier than candy and makes you healthy and happy?
It is, but people say they like candy more than broccoli. So if more people say, hey, I like candy more than broccoli, I'm going to eat the candy because I'm going to listen to the big population of people.
yeah.
Do you think this is a good strategy?
I mean,
pound scale. It's 15-pound scale on you, so 15-pound like weight on you, so you can weight you down. So basically, that's kind of a distortion of weight. It's basically, you know, the different trials of things. For standard error is basically like a standard deviation, like we talked about in the last podcast about, you know, density curves and how they change and everything, and how they, you know, using the sample mean as a method of estimating the popular mean. So, like, this is kind of referring back to a chapter two and how you know, those things were distorted. And those are basically it. It was just a small chapter about those two things. Paige, you want to continue?
Were you about to say?
Were you going to talk about chapter four again?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Hold on. Let me find it. I thought this chapter was the weirdest out of all of them. Because, I don't know, like, It was, like, for the first three chapters, it was just, like, information-based, like, hey, this is what you do, and yada, yada, yada. But, like, in chapter four, it's more numeric-based, and there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of terms that I was just, like, confused about. Yeah.
Okay, so,
I mean, Muhammad basically said most of what chapter four is about. Probable error, like Muhammad said, like, is basically like messes with the mean and standard deviation and
wrapping those up, did you enjoy chapters three and four, Paige?
I enjoyed chapter three. Chapter four was like wow. It was a little difficult, but you know, life goes on.
Yeah, I thought chapter four was pretty small, and I liked how they did I didn't know about probable error. I didn't know about probable error, but I kind of knew about standard error when he talked about, you know, normal curves and density curves and things like that. So that was the kind of thing for me to learn. Now let's move on to Paige and I want to discuss a quote by Samuel Johnson. It's called "Round Numbers Are Always False," and this quote is pretty funny because with round numbers, clearly round numbers are not the right numbers if you think about it. Because, you know, if you get a number that's 8.932, if you round it up, it'll become 9, or if you round it down, it'll become 7 in a situation. So that's kind of how the statistics kind of lie to you, because that's not actually the number you get. But, you know, I think that's kind of forgiven in math. What do you think about that, Paige?
Right.
Yeah, well, Paige agrees.
I was just referring back to page 55. It says, how accurately your sample can be taken to represent the whole field as a measure that can be represented in figures, such as the probable error and the standard error. Mm-hmm. And it says, suppose that you had the task of measuring the size of a good many fields by pacing off defense lines. The first thing you might do is check the accuracy of your measuring system by pacing off what you took to be 100 yards. Doing this a number of times, you might find that on the average you were off by 3 yards. That is, you came within 3 yards of hitting the exact 100 in half your trials. In the other half of them, you missed by more than 3 yards. Like, and then it says your probable error then will be 3 yards. And 100 or 3%. From then on, each fence line that measured 100 yards by your pacing might be recorded as 100, and then there's like a line and a cross, and it says 3 yards. So like I have no idea what they are talking about in that. Like, honestly, yeah. I'm like, what in the world? But it was like I tried. Like, yeah, I know. Like I looked most of the stuff up.
Uh-huh.
and the terms and stuff like that. But some things, I don't know. Like, I need a little clarification on. But.
All right. So this leads into our second question we were going to talk about is, when we see an average reported, what do we need to ask besides which kind of average is being used? And why? Well, in my opinion, I feel like we need to kind of show how this was taken. Like back to chapter 3 about, you know, marketing ads or like marketing ads. I want to know, you know,
marketing campaigns.
Like marketing campaigns or ads. I want to know if the people who said, you know, 5-to-1 for Coke rather than Pepsi, I want to know if those people were paid off or those people are like avid caffeine fans, but they really like caffeine and Pepsi doesn't provide caffeine. Those are things I want to know instead of saying the whole popular generous saying like they like Coke rather than Pepsi. And I feel like that's kind of a thing to know the outside elements of what's actually going on when you look at something like that. What do you think, Paige?
Right.
Well, Paige agrees.
No, wait, hold on. Yeah. No, seriously, wait, what did you say?
About our second question we were talking about, when we see an average reported, what do we need to ask besides which kind of average is being used?
When we see an average reported, what do we need?
So basically saying, like, you know how in chapter 1 it was talking about how outside the lines, basically looking at it, what else do you need to know before you make your mind about, say, the broccoli we were talking about?
So basically, what else do we need to know other than the average?
Well,
other than the average, we need to know, first of all, how many samples we're taking, like how many trials that the person did in order to make an assumption on a certain product.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's one thing, like, and how many people that took part in that. It's another question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's basically it for our podcast today. We went over everything we needed to go over, and tune in for our next chapters. Bye bye.
I saw a butterfly in your hair.
Why are you?
Hi, and welcome to Muhammad and Paige's third podcast discussion on how to lie in statistics. In this chapter, in this installment of our series, we're going to talk about chapters 5, 6, and 7 and what happened in the chapters and have a little discussion on the topics introduced in the chapter. I'd like to begin by talking about chapter 5, and this one was about mostly graphs.
No, no.
But here, Paige, why don't you begin?
Okay, this chapter is basically about how people... manipulate other people when it comes to graphs, and it basically just summarizes how to manipulate a graph so that a person can believe in one thing, but actually it's just a whole other topic, and how people will look at a graph and think that something is good, but really it's worse than it looks or something like that. And it's basically just how pictures really can manipulate people and whatnot. And so Muhammad, like, did you like ever have like any incident where you've seen like a graph or you were deliberately confused about like what it's trying to say, or like
I've seen a couple times, like even with statistics, like our class. Sometimes with standards, I kind of get confused with the graphs, because sometimes our teacher he'll give us a graph, and then he'll ask us to interpret the graph, or, you know, change the graph, or do something, you know, make your own graph, and then you'll be confused because of the overall graph. But I overall, like in real life, I've seen that also. I've seen it also because, let's say, like you know, you can look how something's like overrepresented and say this graph is like, you know, if you look at like, a paradox basically in statistics, when you see a graph is overrepresented, like if you look at, you know, admission standards, say there's a graph about a medical school, and it shows like how many women were rejected, how many males were rejected. And if you take the whole graph and you just focus on the part where that all the females were rejected, then clearly people are going to say that that is this medical school is completely, this medical school is so, like, you know, incredibly competitive. But on the overall, if you look at the overall graph, you can see how it's just a big graph, and that kind of relates back to the paradox aspect of this, because it's clear, like, it's correct in a way, but you know, people can use it to manipulate you. It's saying that, you know, it's competitive, but clearly it's not, because more people get in, and it's not really competitive. So that's another way of looking at it.
Okay.
How about you, Paige? Have you had those things too?
Yeah, I have. Like, I've seen a lot in newspapers when they're trying to just prove a point or whatever. I've seen a lot of this stuff happen in court cases when they'll just, like, cut off half of the axes on and present it on, like, a big screen and whatnot, and just be like, yo, this is what happened when you do yada, 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 yada. So, yeah, of course. I think everyone in once in their life seen a graph that has manipulated them. So, I mean, but, like, you don't realize that it's that you're being manipulated until someone tells you it is manipulation. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, I believe everyone once in their life seen a graph that's just been like, oh, really? Like, yeah. But and just believe, and the graph just tells you a whole other thing, but you believe, you know.
Yeah.
And one thing. And so what I have before me is, like, a graph and stuff like that. So, like, I mean, like, what do you think are some things that, like, you've seen or you would do to manipulate a person?
Well, I don't think the person who's listening to this can't really see it, but, like,
yeah.
It's sort of like a graph where it goes, you know, up, down, up, down, up, down. Like, you know,
it's a line graph.
Yeah, an inconsistent graph. It's a line graph. And you know, if you look at say 2010, and then you look at, it's the highest point.
Yeah.
And then say this graph is about people who buy Coca-Cola, like in the other chapters.
Yeah.
And you know, if you just look at that part of the graph, you can say, wow, everyone's buying Coca-Cola. But if you look at overall, you can see the highs and
the
lows,
trend,
the zeniths,
yeah,
and the plateaus, and how they go up and down. And you can really see, like, say in 2007, how low it was, and people, but you don't see that because only 2010, you can see how high it was with that many people being, you know,
yeah,
buying those things.
But, the ways that I've seen with line graphs is that, like most people would, always change the axes,
mm-hmm,
always, almost always, and they would cut, like, half of the graph. Like, the graph goes from 0, 25, 50, 75, and 100.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the highest point is 100, and the highest point for the other line is, it goes up and then it goes down, but I would like kind of cut it at 50,
mm-hmm,
so you would see just the top half of the graph, and you'll just cut off the lower part, because the more you show, like if you look at anything and you see the whole graph, and then your eyes can honestly see the graph going up, traveling up, and honestly see the lines traveling down,
yeah,
what your reaction would be is like, oh my gosh, like that's such a drastic change,
yeah,
or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, usually they just cut it off. But so, like, obviously people manipulate information in graphs all the time.
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so do you think, like, this should be illegal?
No, because it's math, and I don't think it should be illegal because it's...
So wait, I got a question. So,
yeah.
So say if like you want to buy certain underwear,
yeah,
and you know it's on the graph, it's comparing the brand underwear to just regular underwear,
yeah,
and you see that the graph is cut off a little bit, but for some reason, it looks like the name brand underwear, it looks like it's kind of higher than the regular brand,
yeah.
and you go out and you try the brand on, yeah. and it's itchy and it's scratchy and it's just irritating you, like,
well,
so like how, like, I mean, you'll just get a whole other perspective. Like, you'll have to honestly go out and try out the product. And to represent those numbers, you'll create a bar graph to bring the reader to a halt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that they're able to be recognized and those numbers are able, so that people can see those numbers clearly.
Yeah.
But also, like, you have to realize that I just gave you averages. I didn't say whether I included, in the analysis that I just told you, whether I include tips or whatnot, I just gave you random averages and you just believed it and you just accepted it.
Yeah.
You didn't even ask. Like, you
yeah.
just said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah.
I
yep.
Agree.
Yep. I agree. I agree. My underwear's going to itch forever.
I guess.
Forever. I guess. Whatever. So apparently, the book or Mr. Huff thinks that pictures are better than bar graphs. He, like, really loves pictures to represent data. Like, in the book, there's a picture of, like, how much money you'll make doing this and the third. I forgot what they said. But there's a picture of a little money bag, and there's a picture of and the second picture is a picture of a bigger money bag. And what happens is, and they have the little man standing and whatnot. And what happens is, like, the first picture, when you're trying to represent data, the first picture always has to be smaller than the second picture. The second picture has to be 3 times bigger than the first one.
Yeah.
So that we can,
like a three-shot,
yeah,
three-shot.
So that we can honestly see, what we're
yeah.
looking at, like, what's the grand total that we'll make if we do this, that, and the third. Okay. Is there anything else?
That's really it. Do you have anything else, or can we just go to chapter 7?
You can go to chapter 7.
Okay, so,
I didn't read chapter.
In the final chapter of our podcast for this edition is we're going to talk about chapter 7. And what chapter 7 basically is for the figure to using like a Humpty Dumpty, you know, sort of like in the author uses this example of saying basically, you know, the idea of this chapter is really simple, saying if you can't prove, you know, prove what you're trying to prove something else and demonstrate that they're both the same thing. So like one example they say is basically like, you know, prove that if you can't prove that a drug can cure cold, but you can prove that it kills, you know, 3,000 germs, then basically, you know, killing germs can kill because obviously, you know, if you have a lot of germs in your system, you're gonna get sick. So if you kill the germs, you're gonna kill the virus in you, and you're going to feel better. And that's basically what it's trying to say. And another example is basically with germs also is saying, you know how those Lysol cleaners or those window cleaners or, you know, the cleaners that say, you know, the disinfectants
yeah.
have, like, you're going to kill
99%
of the germs. So you completely assume that you're clean. That's completely clean. Like, no, you're not going to die, but you're completely clean. You're completely clean and everything. And you assume that, but clearly, you know, there's
like
it doesn't kill all the germs. It doesn't kill all the germs in your, you know, in where the place you want to clean it. So you're not completely germ free. So that's kind of a lie there, and that's what you're saying. Also, the author talks about, you know, percentages in a chapter where growth can be measured in percents or percentage points. And when it comes to percents, you know, you always have a sort of a trap. Because, you know, what does growth by 10% mean? Like, you don't know, and it kind of shows, like, all those different things. So, basically, like, you know, if another year in the past...
No. First of all, percentages are, like, the most, like, to be honest, like, I think percentages take... Oh, no, I'm sorry, what am I trying to say? Percentages, like... They really get me to look at, like, I don't know, like, I feel like that, I'm more accustomed to looking at percentages than looking at a graph. I don't know. Yeah. Like, when I look at a percentages, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I have more... I feel like I have, like, when you look at a percentage, you can just say, oh, 10%, okay, that's easy. You got 90%. That means 90% of the time, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But, like, with graphs, it's like, oh, I gotta look at it, and I gotta, like... determine what it's trying to say.
Yeah, and that's sort of like another paradox, because say a teacher tells you,
if you study, then 98% of the time...
I'm locking it up. Like, 5 minutes and I'm locking it up.
Okay. Sorry, that was missed on, but continue.
Like, say, like, 98% of the time, if you study 98% of the time, you'll get an A in this class, honestly, like,
what I was saying about the paradox was, like, say a teacher tells you, I'm taking 10% off, 10% off your grade, but what? And then later on he tells you, I'm just taking 10% off half of your grade, so that's not going to be the biggest hit. So that's kind of like another paradox of saying, 10% is a lot, not that much per se, but, 50%, 10%, half of my test grades, that's 50% of my grade, so my grade's going to go a lot lower.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a big hit. But
20%.
That's basically like 20% of your overall grade,
yeah.
So it's a lot. But overall...
When you put it like that, like the whole 10% and 20%, like I'm gonna take this off in the third, like it really hits your brain and say, oh snap, I gotta get my act together, because when someone says, hey, I'm taking 10% or 20% off, it's like easy to recollect and think about that, and it's like, whoa, wait, that's actually a lot, that's my grade right there. So.
But overall. Like, shifting to, like, review, like, overview and review, how did you feel about the chapters? Did you like them?
Yeah, I liked them.
Me
did
too.
Did you like them?
Yeah, I thought they introduced a lot of, cool topics that I really, really think about when you... This kind of book's kind of, like, mold, like, changing the way I look at different things, like, even in the outside world, and I really, like, appreciate me reading the book, and I really, enjoy it.
I liked, chapter, I like chapter 6.
Yeah.
Chapter 6, the whole picture thing and the one-dimensional and the two-dimensional stuff, like making pictures bigger, like it says you should always make when presenting information and you want to prove something, you should always make the first picture smaller than the second picture, and you should just make the second picture twice as bigger. As first one, I thought that was like really cool because I see that a lot.
Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in to our third podcast, and hopefully you'll tune back in for our final podcast. Let's have a good night, and thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, welcome to Muhammad and Page's last and final installment of Muhammad and Page's podcast about the book How to Lie with Statistics, the book we're reading in our statistics class for our last quarter benchmark. We're going to delve into the final chapters of the book, chapters 8, 9, and 10, and we're just going to have a final some analysis of the book and some overlying themes and other things that we thought about the book. Paige, you want to go first?
In chapter 8, the chapter is called Pulse Hawk Rides Again, and in the chapter they talk about cause and effect, meaning like... You have your problem, which is the effect, but you obviously have to go out and find the reason for the effect, which is the cause, and which is supposed to be supported by like real data and enough data, but usually people put in magazines like this is caused by this, but like where's the proof? So that's basically what he talks about. Because, like, anyone can make the assumption, like, yeah, if you don't read, you get bad grades. But, obviously, like, where's the actual proof of that? And if you do have proof, like, how did you come about by that conclusion and stuff like that? So, example, let's say you tested out kids who play soccer and tend to be less likely to be obese. And the hypothesis turned out to be like to be true, but now you can conclude that kids will be less likely to be obese if they play soccer. But what Mr. Huff has made the point of is that like like I said, like, the conclusion I made was about kids would be less likely to be obese if they play soccer, but is it because kids don't play soccer because they're obese, or is it because the kids who are obese just don't want to play soccer? Like, that's the point that Mr. Huff says in his chapters. So
yeah, and on that point, I think it's interesting because you think of the whole cause and effect aspect. Like, another specific example Mr. Huff posted in what he wrote is about the young smokers, you know, saying in statistics how smokers smokers have bad grades. But what if the people who already had bad grades already took up smoking? So you don't know what is the cause, which is the effect, because the data can be so like doctored and so hazy that you can't really understand what is which. And you can really tell by the assumptions he made in the analysis of cause and effect. Do you have another piece of information?
But and also point I wanted to make, another example would be, let's say if you study, you'll get good grades. Of course, everyone has heard that, like, all right. But also, another person can conclude that if you pay attention in class, you'll also get good grades. So, I mean, that's also another way you can put it, I guess. Anything else?
No, that's really it. Cause and effect, you know, what don't you understand? Do you find this chapter interesting?
I mean, yeah, it was a good point, I guess. I got a little bored.
I thought it was really interesting because of, like, the direct correlations of things that is so, like, hazy. Like, it kind of changes the way you look at a lot of things, because if you say something is, like, smoking is due, you know, to people who get lung cancers are smokers, well, how about people, you know, you might not know, those people already might have had.
There are other reasons.
Yeah, there might have been a lot of other reasons those
that.
People could have gotten lung cancer. And that's the reason, and that's really it, yeah.
Maybe people who are obese just don't like soccer.
Yeah.
Duh.
All right, so let's talk about chapter 9. And chapter 9 is basically the author kind of coined it as how to statisticulate. It's basically, you know, is manipulate readers by using statistics. And this is basically what the entire book is really about. Paige, do you want to start off with that?
Well, like Muhammad said, this is about, this chapter is called How to Statisticulate, and, this chapter basically shows, like, nearly all the possible things people use to manipulate others on information, that's supported by statistical analysis, and, Mr. Huff's first example of that was, darkening areas, which is on page 102. Hold on. Okay. So, like, basically, he shows darkening areas. Like, he shows a map, and he shows the shaded areas, which I've seen a lot. Especially, like, when trying to prove, like, okay, 90% of Americans eat starches every single day, and you'll, like, shade whatever. And, And then people use to manipulate others on statistical analysis and whatnot. And what Mr. Huff shows is a map, and he shades in, like, certain places of the map to show a certain point. Like say how Americans that are obese in the area, and, you know, they'll shade in which states are the most obese throughout the whole United States, but there's, like, really no and data on that. Like, there's nothing to support it but shading. And that can be a little confusing to us and whatnot.
So For the last chapter is basically, you know, how to talk back to statistics, and it's basically just like one cheat sheet for readers, you know, and what, you know, it's basically just questions to ask when you're looking at some sort of data. You know, some questions he kind of points out is like, who says so? Like, who is the one who's publishing the results? Look at the people who are publishing results, and, you know, do they have anything to gain with the results? You know, do some background checks on who is actually doing this and who is looking at those kinds of things. Another question is, how did they measure the results? You know, was there any like sampling bias? Like, another thing you can look to is basically, you know, obviously it's like a simple Google search away if you really want to delve into it, but those are things you should look at if you're really curious about it. Another question is, did something change the subject? You know, are the cause and effect getting muddled? You know, that's basically just looking at, you know, the cause and the effect, and like, you know, and basically I think a strategy I kind of came up with is like switching it around, saying, you know, the effect of this can be manipulated by a lot of different factors. So that could be, you know, a lot of different reasons. And there's another thing to look at. And also, I think the biggest one is like, does it make sense? And look at it. You know, this is basically just logic, common sense, math things, and it's just about people looking at it. And if it doesn't make sense, then you should look at it again and just try to comprehend it. Yeah.
Comprehend what's trying to be portrayed to you. Is what Muhammad's trying to say through statistical data and whatnot. And also, Mr. Huff makes a point on page 106. He says, he gets a reference of checking how many people sleep, and he does not like that. Statistical analysis. He says that is like a waste of time because you'll be off by like 15 minutes, and then you end up saying people sleep an average of 7.831 minutes, but really like that's not accurate. That's just a wasteful average, which he would say, and he said it would be like a poor approximation. I think an example of something similar to checking something like that would be like, how much minutes of the exercise should you have? It would be probably another example of what Ms. Huff was saying about the sleep thing, and like, stuff like, I don't know, stuff that won't be exactly accurate, like ever, is what Mr. Huff was talking about in his analysis, and it'll be just a waste of time to even check that. Okay.
So those are all the chapters in How to Lie with Statistics. Overall, Paige, what did you think about the book?
We had chapter 10.
We did chapter 10.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did. That was just chapter 10.
No, you didn't.
Chapter 10 was How to Talk Back to Statistics.
I thought we were still on chapter
9. No, chapter 10 too. But anyway, yeah. But as Paige was kind of alluding, I thought chapter 9 and chapter 10 were kind of the same thing.
No.
You know, they're both like a cheat sheet anyway.
No, chapter 9 is about the things that people do to manipulate others. Chapter 10
is what to look for.
Chapter 10 is what you should do when you see something.
Yeah, those are the questions I gained when I was talking about those.
Oh, I didn't
yeah.
know. Maybe because you were looking at the wall.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But anyway, did you talk about who says so? Who says so?
Yeah, all those things. Yeah, I talked about all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the point of who says so, he talks about the person who is biased toward the situation and whatnot. And, And then he goes into talking about how does he know, which is, like, he points out a questionnaire that involves, like, 1,200 companies to see if they have raised prices or whatnot. And he makes a point that only 14 replied and only 9% haven't, and 9% raised prices. And he... the assumption that 5% I'm sorry. It says that 9% haven't raised prices, 5% have raised prices, and 86% refused to say, like, refused to do the questionnaire.
And he says you can represent this as something biased. So, like, you can say, like, all right, only, okay, only, only 5% have raised prices, but if you're against that, you would rearrange that data into saying, like, oh, yeah, so Americans do, you know, raise prices and whatnot, and, yeah.
Yeah, as that page was saying what I was saying earlier, you know, that was kind of a cool chapter. But overall, how do you think about the book?
Thought it was good.
I thought it was good. I thought it kind of changed the way I look at things, like, overall in my life, you know, different aspects of everything. You know, if it's commercials or something I buy, like Paige was talking about in an earlier podcast about itchy underwear, and there are a lot of different things that really work. And I feel like that's a good.
It makes you aware.
Yeah, it makes you aware of a lot of different things. Overall, I thought the style of the book was kind of weaker, in my opinion. I felt the way it was written was kind of weaker.
I liked the way it was written. It felt like it was written to you, like the whole shading. I like the whole shading of the pictures and whatnot. Like, I thought it was, like, directly written.
I thought the author had kind of a bad time transitioning through different chapters. And chapters, I don't know why there was a chapter 9 and 10, but I think they were the same things. They could have just talked about both of those things in chapter 9.
At first, I thought Muhammad was talking about chapter 9.
Yeah, it gets confusing. 10. Yeah, because it's the same thing, yeah. But do you have any questions? Any overall?
No. Do you have any questions?
No. That's all. Thank you for listening to our final podcast, and have a great day. Bye bye.
Did you talk about?